Hi, and welcome to the American Midwife Series podcast with me, your host, Angelica Malone. In today's episode, I'm talking with Ms. Afua Hassan, a community midwife in Houston, Texas, with 37 years of experience and more than 2,000 births under her belt. Ms. Afua graduated from Brown University with a degree in African American Studies. She was on the path to becoming an obstetrician, but found her calling after a chance meeting with a midwife. Ms. Afua's journey brought her to Houston to study midwifery under Mercy Inyoung. After graduating from the Houston School of Midwifery in 1984, she served for many years as a home birth midwife before opening her own birth center in Houston's Third Ward in 2011, The Birthing Place. The Birthing Place is the only freestanding birth center in Houston owned and operated by a Black midwife. In 2019, she received the Midwives Alliance of North America's Outstanding Community Midwife Award for her exceptional clinical care and the emotional and educational support she provides to the community. I'm so very excited to talk with Ms. Afua today, and I'm excited for you to hear this podcast. I hope you enjoy. Let's get into it. Hi, listeners. Just one thing before we get into the episode. Please note that there are some technical issues with the recording that cause the audio to sound out of sync at times. You're still able to understand both me and Ms. Afua, but you miss out on some of the richness of the dynamic of the conversation. This is definitely far from ideal, but the insights from the interview are still so interesting that we wanted to share it with you. We're working on finding a better solution to the problem, and so we hope you are able to still enjoy this episode. All right, bye. Wonderful. Okay. Well, welcome to the podcast, Ms. Afua.
Okay. Thank you so much for having me.
It's an honor. So before we get into it, we're going to talk a little bit about your path to midwifery, what you've been doing. But before that, I just want to check in and see, how are you doing? How is your practice? How are the mamas at the birthing place with the COVID pandemic?
Though it hasn't happened yet, nobody has come down with it, but I know it's going to happen, and I tell my clients it's going to happen, and to try to cut down on their anxiety, because when you watch television on any level, it is anxiety ridden. It's a real mm-hmm. disease. It's a real disease, and people are sick and people are dying. And at this point, as opposed to in the beginning, yes, you keep your distance and all that, but if you go out, there's a possibility to catch it or somebody to catch it. And mm-hmm. so I just try to prepare them mm-hmm. for the eventuality that somebody, 6 degrees of separation, somebody, yes. somebody gonna get it.
Yes. I like that you're telling them, though, to not be anxious. I think that that's also kind of unique to midwifery, is that we really care about the emotional impact that what's going around in the surroundings are having on our clients. And it's not just like, stay safe, wash your hands. We're also thinking about, how is this person processing this? Like, what is right. this going to mean if they start internalizing all of this?
Right. Right.
Okay. All right. So are you ready to get started?
Yes, I'm ready.
Okay. So, when did your desire to become a midwife begin? And then if you could just go right into how you came to midwifery, that would be awesome.
Okay. So even from high school, I knew I wanted to deliver babies, but the only way I knew to do it was to be an obstetrician. And so while at Brown, I was pre-med in African American Studies. And so I was like, okay, you gotta be a doctor. And mm-hmm. one day I was seen in the clinic by a midwife. And I don't even know how I knew what that word was, but I did. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh, they still have those. And so I went about finding out how I wanted to be a midwife. And, you know, I was calling doctors. How do you become a midwife? And it was so funny because they would hang up on the phone like, plonk, you know. it was really funny. Well, I mean, it wasn't funny at the time. And of course, this is before the internet. And so you had to go to the library. And but I found that there were two paths to midwifery. One was to be a nurse, and that's a certified nurse midwife. or you could be a direct entry midwife. And having graduated from Brown in that Ivy Tower, I realized that I wanted to learn midwifery from the bottom up as opposed mm-hmm. to top down. And mm-hmm. so, and I also knew I didn't want to ever have to work in the hospital. Like that was not what I wanted to do. And so I, after graduation, I'm from Connecticut and I moved to Texas because at the time direct entry midwifery was legal in Texas. It wasn't legal in Connecticut in 83. And so I came down here and I met some African, I was very, very fortunate. I got to meet Ayana Ade, Rashida Mushtabah, and then I met Mercy, who had a midwifery school, Houston School of Midwifery, and I enrolled in there. And so that's how I got to the path of midwifery that I am.
Okay. I think that many people can identify with that first part of your story, is knowing for a long time that they want to be involved in birth, they want to catch babies, and thinking that the only way they can do that is becoming an obstetrician. That was something I thought. I also was under the impression that physicians spent a lot more time with their clients than they actually do, or their patients. But I think that many people, like I said, can identify with thinking, I know I want to go into this field, but this is the only way I know to do it.
Correct.
So when you came across this midwife, did you happen to meet other midwives at the time when you were in Connecticut? How did you find out about midwifery in Houston?
So like I said, this is before the internet, and one of my college classmates had given me an article in this Black newspaper about Ayana and Rashida, who were doing who had an organization, CPAD, Childbirth Providers of African Descent, and they were having a conference in Atlanta. And so I wanted to go to the conference, missed the conference, but found some people who were at the conference. And then I ended up from Atlanta. I went to the farm in Tennessee because Ina May was having her yearly week-long conference. And so I made it there. Rashida was on the farm and she said, oh, I have to go to Houston because Ayana's having her baby. And I had a car. So I was like, okay, I looked on the map because I was going to Austin to visit one of my college classmates who was in law school. I said, oh yeah, I could drop you off. And and so from Tennessee, we rode to Houston. And Ayana, as soon as she opened the door, she said, oh, you want to be a midwife? Come on, we'll figure it out. Because Ayana had studied midwifery in Austin and Rashida was from Chicago. And she learned midwifery in Israel because she was a Ben Israelite at the time. And so it was a faith journey. And I just followed it, say, yeah. And here I am. And I have to say, Ayana became a CNM. And then I met Althea and she was a nurse and she became a CNM. And so I teeter-tottered with the idea for a little while because I'm from New Haven and Yale is right there. And they knew Helen Varney. And so I was like, okay, I can get in. But I didn't, I never wanted to work in the hospital. So, and then I didn't want to go back to the cold because Connecticut's cold. But, but I am, after 37 years, going on 38, I am so pleased with the path of midwifery that I have taken that I hope that everybody enjoys what they do as much as I enjoy doing what I do.
Yes. I love that. I love to hear that you're still passionate about midwifery after all this time. And that's something we're going to talk about later, is just how do you have such longevity? Like, how do you stay so vibrant and in love with midwifery after all this time? But before we get into that, I want to ask you something. You mentioned the names of some amazing women that I've heard about. I interviewed Ms. Chafia a couple of months back, and she was dropping some of the same names you were just now. Can you tell me more about these ladies and just like who else was there training with them? Were you the only one? Were there a group of other Black women who are also saying, "Hey, I want to do midwifery," coming from different parts of the country? You know, what was this time like? It sounds like you were adventurous and, like you said, it was a faith journey.
Yeah, it
So
was.
tell
I
me about the
mean,
culture at the time.
okay, so we were renegades. And I was the young one, right? Because I was 23 and they were in their 30s, or like at the end of their, yeah, they were in their 30s. And so I was this young, blah, blah, blah. But so CPAD, which was Childbirth Providers of African Descent, brought Shafia together, Nankululeko Leko, who's in New York still presently, Salama, who's in Atlanta. Like we all got together, and there's so many, and for this conference, and so it's a sisterhood, like, and so we were all the different ones in our family, like Saran, who's now in Atlanta too, because I can remember. My mother said, what do you want to be now? Like, what's happened to the obstetrician? But like Ayana was a Black Panther. Rashida, when she was in Chicago, it was illegal to be a midwife, and she did it anyway. And there were some women there who went to jail, because they were practicing quote unquote medicine without a license. And so it is a sisterhood. I still talk to Shafia. Unfortunately, Ayana passed. Rashida lives around the corner. Althea's not that far. So it is a, I just talked to Salama last night, and she has a great granddaughter who's 12, and like, yeah, and I'm gonna be a midwife. And I was like, okay, come to Houston. You can deliver a bunch of babies. She's 12.
Oh,
She's 12.
wow.
And she has the passion like an adult woman, like an adult woman.
Yeah.
And so it is, what we do is, it's remarkable. It's really remarkable. And I say that in the time, not of COVID, but where physicians don't think that we should have the right, I'll say the majority of physicians, not all physicians, but we shouldn't have the right to do what we do, and women shouldn't have the possibility of even choosing us. And so we have to be a renegade, because when we have to transport somebody to the hospital, sometimes it's nice and sometimes it's not. And but we still have to go in there and do it, and then still see our clients, down the road. Yeah.
Absolutely. And how do you feel like I don't want to get too off, but I feel like you've touched on something really important. And not all communities are community midwives accepted by the greater medical community. And it can be really hostile going to the hospital with a client. How do you feel you're accepted in your community when you're having to transfer a client? Do you know like the safe hospitals where you go and you'll be accepted and listened to, and the ones where, we only go there if we really have to go? What has been your experience there, and how has it changed over time?
So now hospitals hire hospitalists, and a hospitalist is an obstetrician who is there for walk-ins, like we bring it, that we're considered walk-ins, or when a baby is coming and the doctor hasn't made it yet. And so the deal is that we don't know who we're going to get at the time. And so we go in like just prepared. Like I have my records. Some will ask questions, some don't even want to talk to me. I'm talking about the hospitalists. And so when I go in, my client needs care. So it's not about my ego. It's about, can I get care for my client? Whatever you think. Now I've gotten treated awful one time. And I mean, when I say awful, the doctor told me that the only women who should use midwives are dogs and women in East Texas. And I'm like, what do you have against women in East Texas? And so, but when I said to him, is that culturally competent? He had to back off because he knew he could get, he knew he could get sued, because physicians don't have to agree with what my clients do, but they have to respect their choices. Otherwise, they can get sued. And so I've only had to use that one time. And, you know, because if they don't want to talk to me, they don't want to talk to me. I mean, there's nothing but, I mean, he wouldn't let me see my client. I mean, it got really, really ugly. So, yeah, but, so we don't know. Now, there is one hospital, like I'm 5 minutes away from the medical center in Houston, and the medical center in Houston is the biggest medical center in the world that has all these hospitals. And there's one, Women's Pavilion, that they have presently, they have two midwives as hospitalists. I know them both. And so, but if they're on call, then I could say, hey, and they're both named Mary. Hey, Mary, I'm coming in. Right. And so it's like total respect, because that hospital also has a practice of midwives. And they used to work for the practice, and now they're hospitalists. So, you know, if they're on call, it's an easy transfer, regardless what it is.
Okay.
You know, I just explain, this is what happened, and then there we go. But at any other time, it's like, it's, we don't know. We don't know. Because I do have a consulting physician, but his hospital is 20 miles away. And if I'm having an emergency situation, I'm not driving. I'm not taking my car.
Yeah, that's not where I'm going.
So, you know, they see him if something is going on during their pregnancy. Like I had a mom with fibroids that were huge. And I was like, no, you need to go see to make sure you can still have this out of hospital birth. And she did. And she did.
Okay. Okay. All right. I see. So that's good to know, because in some areas it's like, hospital, we know this is a safe hospital, but what you've explained is something I've seen as well, where this is a, we don't know about this hospital, but it could be based on the provider. We might get a really great provider who takes this, and then it's an awesome transfer, or we could get this provider who doesn't like out of hospital midwifery, and it's not a really
and I explain
transfer,
that to my clients, even potential clients, because that's always one of the questions. So what happens if something goes wrong? So I explain that straight up in the front, like, you know, no, I'm not going to the hospital and delivering you in the hospital. I'm, you know, so I give them, you know, all the information that they need.
Okay. That's good. Thank you for explaining that. So I want to roll back just a little bit. We were at your point of midwifery school and training with Mercy and Young. I'd like to know, tell me about the Houston School of Midwifery. What was it like at the time? Was it a building? Was it something you did in just, you know, different locations? Whoever was teaching? Who were the instructors? Who were your clients you were serving?
Okay, so this was, I started in 83, and Mercy was the main instructor, but we had Dr. Hamby, who was a pediatrician. We had Dr. Williams. He was an obstetrician, and he would come and teach classes. Throughout the time, sometimes she had as many as 12 students. Sometimes, you know, she had like four students. And sometimes it was be just me, because I was determined to learn everything that I could learn from her, from Ayana, from Rashida. But she was the one who had the class, like we would sit down, get the books, and do, you know, and get the learning that way. With Ayana, Rashida, now Thea, it was a practicum part. We did the clinical part, but, and Mercy, we did clinical also, because she had a practice. So there were times she had an office. There were times we would have classrooms in her garage. And her, she had a home birth, mostly it was a home birth practice. Back then it was mainly Caucasian women. We had a couple of African Americans. But I would say 95% were Caucasian women. And for a short period of time, before birth centers had to be licensed, she had a birth center. So there were some moms that, and it was a, it was an apartment that she rented. And so moms would come there and deliver. And so it was really great because Dr. Williams, who was the obstetrician, he was very midwifery friendly. When we had a transfer, like he would explain everything. He was, you know, very good with the clients. Dr. Hamby, he was actually my children's pediatrician. And so he was wonderful also. So, but in terms of who was there day in and day out, it was actually Mercy. And Mercy Inyang was a, because she has, she just passed in 2015. She was a Nigerian woman who was trained in England. So she was a SCM, which is the equivalent of a certified nurse midwife, and here in the United States. And she was very, 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 very knowledgeable.
I have two questions for you. So one, you mentioned that Mercy had a birth center before there was certification for birth centers. Did the whole creation of the certification around birth centers impact her ability to keep her birth center open?
No.
Okay. I just wanted to see. I was wondering. And then also, I know you're a huge advocate for VBACs and breech. Did you learn breech during this time?
I remember the first one, and it was the first time mom breech. I mean, this is her first baby. I remember that was the first one that I attended with her. Yeah, we did that. We did twins. We didn't do triplets, but we had twins, breeches, and we had VBACs back then.
Oh, I love it. I love it. And so do you feel like you're able to still use some of those skills today? Do you offer those things to your clients today?
Yeah, I still do. I do external versions when it happens. Or I'll deliver a breech and twins. Yes, ma'am.
Oh, yes. You're keeping it alive, Mrs. Yeah. I'm so happy. Okay. All right. So I want to go after midwifery school. You still spent some time working.
Yeah. So school was for 3 years. I worked with her for 3 years. And then it was another 4 years with Ayana, Rashida, and Althea before I hung out my shingle saying I'm ready to take, like I would have my own clients, but I didn't attend births without them. So it was really 10 years. Okay. It was really 10 years before I was like, okay, I'm big. I'm a big girl now.
I think I've heard you speak about that before, that you think it's important that students have a mentor or at least
and it's not happening. And it's not happening because I have students and they, you know, I'm an experienced midwife. And I'm like, it's how I liken it to when my son got his driver's license. Now he got a license, but do you think he was ready for all different driving experiences? and because midwifery, you have two lives in your hands. You know, you have the mother and the baby. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I learn stuff every birth, like every birth. And so, yeah, but they're out there doing it. And so I'm like, okay.
Yeah, it's true. You get a lot. I do see many midwives who get a license and then they open their own center and they're doing it all on their own. And I don't know if they're actually having that mentorship that you talk about, but like you said, I mean, I've only been to not even anywhere near as many births as you have. And I know that every birth is different and you learn so many things. I can only imagine having 5 years of mentorship versus just the 3 years that you're required. That makes a difference. And 10 years on top of that makes even more of a difference by the time you go out to practice on your own.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to hear a little bit about when you started your own practice. What was that like? And then lead us into, actually, you know what? Tell us a little bit about starting your own practice. When you first went out on your own, what was that like? How did you find your clients?
Okay, so this was before the internet. So there's before the internet and after the internet, okay? That's how life is with midwifery for me. So I used to do television okay. commercials. I used to do radio spots. I used to do billboards. And nothing compares to social media. Nothing compares to social media. I mean, even word of mouth. Because back then, the client was the only one who would have a home birth. Like they, it wasn't like, oh yeah, all my friends are having home births. They were the only ones. Even if I thought, oh man,
okay.
I'm in with the homeschoolers, still only one in that group would do it. And so, yeah.
Uh-huh.
So it was not as easy as it is to even get an interview. Like now I can get an interview with social media. But so it would be people who knew me. It would be word of mouth in the beginning. And I did home birth for the longest time. I didn't open up the birth center mm-hmm. until 2011. And so, dang, mm-hmm. wow. I'm just thinking it's 20. I say that like it was just yesterday, but we're in 2020.
Oh, my. Uh-huh. Yes.
Yeah, I
you've
mean,
been doing
yeah,
it for a little bit.
And for me, like, I'm not even doing home birth right now because I'm very, very fortunate that when I bought my house, the birth center is on the first floor and I live on the second floor. So when I go to work, I just go down the steps. I turn the TV. Oh, you have no idea.
That's nice.
I turn the TV on and I look at the traffic, Houston traffic. I said, oh, and I go down to the steps. I said, oh, the steps not that bad today. And I and then I go down the steps and, oh, I'm at work. Yeah, oh, yeah, brush my teeth. Now, yep. Because also, when they call in the middle of the night, and I already know that they're not in labor, but they, you know, especially these first time, yeah, come mm-hmm. on and come. I brush my teeth. I'm not even putting on a bra. I'm not going to lie. I will brush my teeth so I'll be presentable on some level. Check them. Okay, go home. I'll talk to you later. I mean, you know, so that having to drive somewhere to go, those days are over for me. Mm-mm. Yeah, so mm-hmm. oh, no, you have
That's
no
lovely.
Idea how lovely it is. I don't have to pack a tub. I don't, yeah, none of that.
No. All your bags and everything
right
is tucked away
downstairs,
right downstairs.
There. It is right downstairs. So, yes, in the beginning, it was, but I did do one thing. I did, I knew, it was, and this was before designer telephone numbers. And so I dialed. I called the telephone company. I said, how can I get 713 midwife to be my phone number? And the lady said, we don't do that. I said, what? You don't do that? She said, no, we don't do that. And so I called the number. She said, but if somebody has a number and you call it, it'll be $100 for them to get a new number. And then you can have that number. So I called the number. I said, oh, this used to be my grandma's number a long time ago. And I really miss it. Can I have it? And I'll pay for you to get a new number. And they were like, huh? I was like, yeah. I said, yeah. And then he was like, okay, whatever. And so, and so that's how my telephone number is 713 midwife. And No,
you are
I have
a
four kids
marketer.
In need you, of gonna, stuff and you don't have any money. That's what that's called.
we were going to talk about, there are so many things you're bringing up that we were actually going to talk about later, but I want to talk a little bit about your social media impact, because like you said, before there was even social media and the internet, you were already out there marketing. You were doing billboards, radio ads, and it's just not something I see a lot of midwives be really adapt to, and you are very good at it. I don't know if you have someone else doing your social media right now so that you can focus on the midwifery part of it, but how do you How have you learned that that's an important way of marketing your business and like bringing
okay,
in people?
I'm gonna be honest. You know, I'm a very fortunate woman.
Okay.
Just like my classmate showed me the thing about CPAD and go to Atlanta to the conference. This young lady came into my life. She already had a baby. The baby was just 3 months old. And she was like, oh yeah, I'll do your social media for you. And I was like, okay. I mean, and the Facebook had started, another client had started it, but they weren't really doing it. And she said, oh, and you need an Instagram. And I was like, who's going to find a midwife on Instagram? And so she started the Instagram, Kiana Wilson. And she, so how'd you hear about us? Instagram. Here I said to Kiana, keep doing that Instagram thing.
Exactly. What you said is so common. I meet many midwives who say, oh, I'm not interested. And I try and tell them, well, your clients are interested.
Right.
The people that you want to come for home birth,
they're on Instagram. Yes, they are. And so I'm like, I pay her now. I'm like, keep doing that thing. Just keep doing that thing. Do that. That things come to me as opposed to me. Because you have four kids, single mom, and you trying to run a practice, run the kids. I'm not thinking about social media. And even now, I'm not on it a lot. You know, like yesterday was my birthday, and I got so many texts. Thank you. But
happy belated birthday.
The Instagram thing blew up. And at first, I was like, Kiana didn't even call me and tell me happy birthday. Why? Because everybody was sending her stuff to post, and some people, she couldn't repost it to Facebook. And I mean, my Facebook, Instagram thing is so happy birthday. My kids were singing happy birthday. And yeah, it's a beautiful thing, but I'm not on there all day. Like, oh, you know, people look on their phone all the time. My neck doesn't hurt looking down like that. No.
I love it, though. I love that you had this angel just step in and say,
correct,
Mr. Fula, I'm going to take care of this for you. You need this.
Correct.
And then it's just been such a blessing to your practice for all these
Do
years.
Do it at all.
And you have
not
had to,
not,
like you said,
no,
strain
I'm
your
not.
Neck on
Mm-mm.
the phone. Exactly. That's awesome. It's so smart. Hopefully some midwives are listening and thinking.
And you have to be consistent with it. Like, you know, you just got to keep posting it. And the people post. And I don't even know how it goes. I just know I'm going to keep. Yeah, no, I just keep paying.
You don't need to know.
Here you go.
Okay. I want to ask you a question.
Correct.
So you became a midwife in the 80s. You have been doing this for 37 years, like we said. But in the 90s, we know NACPM, NARM, the CPM credential, all that came around. So what was did they have a title for you at the time after you graduated school? And then what was it like for the transition when these organizations came in and started creating the CPM credential and licensure
first,
and all of that?
We were registered midwives. Then we were something else. We had a whole bunch of different names. And the last one is that we're licensed midwives, LMs. And so when the NARM thing came out, I was like, because I had been a midwife, I didn't have to do that. And so I'm like, so what's the purpose of me doing that? Because then I just got to pay more money for something that I'm already doing. Now, the midwives are like, well, you're part of this organization and it is something in numbers. I said, well, I ain't paying no more money. So I am not a CPM. I'm not going to be a CPM. I'm not leaving Texas. Like if I had to leave Texas, but I'm not going anywhere. I'm right here. So I'm a licensed midwife still.
Okay. That's very interesting because as Katie and I were preparing for the podcast, we were thinking like, oh, you know, she's a CPM, blah, blah. And yeah. Like, wait, yep. She was around before there was CPM. Let's check and see.
So and that was it. That was in 85. Licensing
that, exam. That's that it. One you don't.
I just got to keep.
And so you don't have
money.
To keep doing it.
Well.
Do you find that? Are you a part of like?
Well, MANA one of the things
like
you
that?
Have to know about MANA is that MANA was a very racist organization. And so in the 80s and 90s, when we were trying to let them know, hey, African Americans, we have our own issues. Well, you're women, so you really don't have any other issues than the majority of us. And so the older ones, midwives, we were like, okay, fine, bye, you know? We tried to have a woman of color thing, and they were like, you don't need that. And now they want that, but no, I'm not.
Yes.
I'm like, whatever. I'm right here in Houston. I'm good.
Yeah. It's very interesting that you say that they weren't interested originally, but they're somehow really interested now.
Well, you know, they had a black president. I don't know if she's still, she was some color. She was light skinned. I don't know what she was, but she wasn't white. And she might have been, you know, she was really interested in trying to bring us in there. And I was looking at her like, oh, okay, yeah.
Do you think so? Do you have
no
part of your practice
I
now, like student midwives?
Go. Oh yeah, I did.
Is that was something you did for a while, and then you
like,
decided
I'm
not
old.
To do anymore?
I'm not, and really, I'm not old. But there's a generational gap. Like when I was training in early midwife, and like I knew midwives who were going on 100 years old, and. You know, they told us about their practice, and Miss Smith, who was in Alabama, I'm from Connecticut, so every time I would drive home with my four kids, I would stop by because she was right off the highway. And I was like, Miss Smith, I'm going to have to quit and go get a real job because I'm not making any money. And she said, if you don't do it, who's going to do it? And I was like, you know, but... It is a devotion of life. And so these new midwives are saying, we need work-life balance. And I'm like, how is that different from an obstetrician? Because they want to be in a group of midwives, and then whoever is on call delivers the baby. So perfect example, MANA was in Austin, and I got an award. And it was on the weekend, but I had two moms that were due, and two of my colleagues, they don't work in my practice, but they were like, oh, we'll cover for you. And I was like, yeah, no, it's not that kind of party. Like my clients expect me to be there. And so that piece of paper that they gave me was not more important than attending their birth. And like, if you just look on Instagram for my birthday, the accolades that I got was way more worth any piece of paper that MANA could give me about, you know, your love, your this, your that, your the other. And so, but these new midwives are saying, yes, they're saying, oh, because we know the older midwives, they get divorced. Well, I got divorced because I married the wrong man. Now, it had nothing to do with midwifery. No, because he said,
let's not
blame that
midwifery.
I was a midwife. He didn't want to go to hospital to have any children. And so he, like, midwifery was not why I got divorced. Then the next thing they say is, oh, and the children are mad because, yes, I miss a lot of stuff. I miss graduations. But they know that what I do helps them to do the stuff that they want to do, like travel the world. My kids are, you know, they've lived around. I had girls living in Costa Rica. One lived in Cameroon. One of my boys lived in Cameroon. So they know that shit not free. I'm sorry if I'm supposed to cuss. Okay, great. It's not free. It's not free. And so they don't. So I don't understand what kind of relationship people have with their kids that, you know, their kids are mad because they got to go to work. And going to work could be any time of the day, like any kind of time, any kind of whatever. And so bye. Like, I got to go. Like, bye. You know, I was like...
So you felt like the current student midwives just wouldn't, culture that they bring to midwifery is not the culture.
And
that
unfortunately, you provide that's to your clients. Where it's moving to. You know, where you get whoever is on call, and you know, whether you like them or not. And because I said to my clients, I said, so how would you like it? Somebody else come and deliver you? They looked at me like, are you retarded? I mean, that's the wrong word. Are you, no, that's,
that's not what they wanted.
Yeah, that's right.
Mr. Fula, we want Mr.
Okay,
Fula.
I was just checking, like, you know, no. And I wouldn't, Ayana and Mercy were my, Mercy was my midwife the first time, and Ayana, well, they were all there, because I'm a fool when I'm in labor. So they were all there. And you think I want somebody, just somebody walking in? I don't need, I could not imagine that in a gozillion years. Yes.
So have you built your practice around that model? Like, do you do you restrain like attorney?
Yep.
Like, do you have a certain number of clients that you say, I'll take
about
this month?
Five.
Okay. And how many do you take typically in
a
month?
In 2017, I don't know what happened.
Oh, that's a good number.
I had 17 in what was that, April? And so I know it was crazy. And so I enlisted the help of Nankuleko, who she's a midwife, she's a CNM too, who she's in New York, yep, and she came down and stayed 2 months
in New York,
and we had a blast. Like, yeah, no, we, it was like one lady walked
that
in, and Nankuleko was on the back porch, and I'm yelling, get down here, the baby's coming out now. She just walked in, and she was like, well, when did she get here? I'm now, and get down here now, like, you know. And we laughed. We laughed,
The birthing place sounds like a really family-type place. It sounds like people come, and they're there to see, like,
Yeah, Nicola, we're family.
Not, you know,
we
the midwife
are
or
community
the maternity care provider.
You know, I feel very, very proud to be the owner, the life force of the birthing place, because everybody brings something to it. And even some moms who don't talk, but they just, they learn stuff every time, because we have group prenatal, we have a dad's group, we have Healing Monday where they get to walk and talk. And I see my moms from the very beginning every 2 weeks, because yes, it's about relationship building.
Oh, you
and,
do.
So it's important to know who they are. And so yeah, from 12 weeks, whenever they sign up, it's every 2 weeks.
Oh, wow.
No,
I
okay.
bet your clients.
Okay.
I'm, so I'm going to assume they would love it. But
here you go.
How do most
so they
people,
first come
how
like,
are they
what we,
receiving
what we
got to
come here every 2 weeks for? Some. After they come, oh, I look forward to it. Oh, I like, they don't miss. They're like, oh, but I say it's a check-in. They were like, oh, you have no idea how much I look forward to coming to the birthing place, because it's not just listening to the baby. It's like, how you doing? What's going on? You know, how's the job? How's your sex life? What you know, and I talk to the dads. How come you're not having sex with her? Is it because she's pregnant and getting bigger? And, you know, it's like, no. Or I'll say to the moms, they'll be like, oh, I don't really feel like doing it. I'm like, Are you mad at him? Is he abusing you? No. Okay. Come on. Let's go have some sex. And he go to dads. Thank you.
Yeah. You are truly a community midwife.
Oh yeah, and then because it's my house, you home, we in the neighborhood. I'd be like, yeah, come on by.
So you're located in Houston's Third Ward. Tell me about the Third Ward, and then tell me about what prompted you to
choose. I'm from New Haven, Connecticut. I grew up in a Black neighborhood, and Third Ward was like the neighborhood I grew up in. But because I'm 5 minutes from downtown, I'm 5 minutes from the medical center, regentrification has come and has changed the face of the neighborhood. But and at first, white people, when they came, I remember a chiropractor saying to me, is my wife going to be safe here when she comes for her prenatals? I said, well, is your neighborhood safe? And he was like, oh, yes. I said, so you're telling me nobody has ever gotten their house broken into? Nobody has ever been? And then he shut up. I'm like, it's as safe, like I say, birth is as safe as life gets. This neighborhood is as safe as life gets. But now it's a bunch of white people here. So everybody, oh, they're like, oh, yeah, You know, oh, they changed the tune. Oh, we can come over there now. Oh, yeah. It's like, but so that's why I bought the house where I was. And I had colleagues to say, oh, that's not a good neighborhood. That's not this. That's not that. And that, or you shouldn't live in the house. But then their little butts got older too. And they're like, oh, because who wants to drive? Like, you know, drive for somebody you know is not in labor, or drive when, oh, my bag broke and they just peed on themselves. Like, you know, okay, I don't have to do none of that.
I really would love to visit your place because it's nothing like any of the midwifery practices here in this area. So I'm in Seattle, and what you're describing is very much what I imagined when I thought of myself becoming a midwife, being an integral part of the community, just being someone that people wanted to come and hang out with, and I wanted to spend time with my clients. And it's just very interesting to see the difference. Obviously, this is a very white culture. It's a very city metropolitan type feel. I know Houston's a big metropolitan area too, but it would just be interesting to be able to see the difference.
Yeah, and so I can honestly say that
more community feel.
Most of my clients, like almost 100%, were white. And then the second wave were Latinas. And now we come in. And we here, like we here, like, you know, even though our as African Americans, our families might not be on board, we come in, and it's great. It's wonderful.
How are your Black and Brown clients finding you? And then what is it that, you know, how are they finding you, and what brings them to your practice? Because just honestly, there are so many of us who did not know about community midwifery when we were pregnant and didn't choose that option. How are they finding you and finding out that that is what they want? And then how do you walk them?
Some of them, okay, first they find me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. But now that more, like I said earlier, that women were the only ones like in their whole community. Now there are more women in the community, in their community, having out-of-hospital births. Oh, my sister, or my sister-in-law, or my somebody. There's a barbershop right up the street run by a Black man. And so a grandfather went in there. Oh, yeah, my granddaughters have... Oh, with that Black lady up the street, my daughter did it too. Like... And so when they came back and told me that, I was like... wow, it's really, it is community. Like, I was really shocked. But for some, I tell them, don't tell their parents, don't tell their family, because it's too negative. And I say that to Caucasian clients. And I had two engineers that, because here I go, are they paying your bills? Because even after they had the baby, I go to the house, I have my shirt on. And they say, you're a, you didn't mean, I said, no, I'm their doula, because they still weren't telling, they were like, we're going to have all our kids and then we're going to tell them, because the mom was a NICU nurse. The grandfather was the some big time attorney, and like, they give them hell. They were like, we just don't want to hear that. And so they didn't tell until they had all their kids, and then they told. So now I'm just sit down and shut up. But I do limit people who could come because it is about energy. And so if they don't have, I have to meet whoever you want to come. Mm-hmm. I have to meet the person beforehand, because as a midwife, I have to, I have to manage the birth. I have to manage the couple. Then I got to manage the people. And if they come in with the wrong energy, like, why are you going to pay me all this money and then still have to end up going to the hospital? And so, oh, but my mom, I was like, yeah, but she doesn't believe you should do it. And so she can't come. And if you don't like that, you could go too. Because I've been doing this long enough that I really don't need, I don't want issues that I see coming. And so, yeah, because there are some that are coming you don't see. Yes. But if I see it coming, oh, yeah, let me tell you where you could go.
That's good. I mean, it's important that people, like, you just honest, you're dishonest with them instead of waiting for something, like you said, that you can see coming.
They don't have, when they leave me for a consultation, I say, you will not have to wonder if what a fool says, she meant it. I mean, everything that I say.
Okay. So, tell me about some of the offerings that you have at the birthing place.
Group prenatal.
You talked about healing Mondays.
Group prenatal
classes.
Happens once a month for the moms.
So tell us about what you offer.
It's the third Sunday of every month. I feed them. It's a potluck, but we provide most of the food. And we have a topic. And so it's from 3 to 5. So if you got to go to church, you can go to church and come after church. And the moms month after, and we take pictures, so you can go on Instagram and Facebook and see the group prenatals. And so month after month, the moms progress in their pregnancy, and then they're the one up next, and then they come back after they had their baby and tell their stories. So, and they become friends. Like, they have a group me thing of birth and place moms. Oh, my baby got a rash, or my nipples are doing this. And they solve it themselves. They don't have to call me. But they have 24 hour access to me, because they text me, call me, you know, and because my thing is, I prefer for them to get their questions answered so they can go to sleep. And as opposed to wondering, oh, I don't know what she's gonna do, blah, blah, blah. And so so they have 24-hour access to me. So that's group prenatal. Then the dad's group, it doesn't happen as often as the mom's group, but it's dad supporting dads. So I go down there, leave some questions, and then I leave. And they talk about everything. They talk about vaccinations. They talk about how life changes after they have a baby. They talk about vasectomies. They talk about everything. And they really love it, because men generally don't talk like that. They just like, yeah, man, But I really get them to talk. And so they like that. Healing Monday, for moms who aren't working and for the moms who just had their babies, it's a slow walk to China, but they walk and they're like, because, do you have children? Okay. So, you know, with the first
one, I have two,
you breastfeeding, you lonely in the house. You're like, I got to do this again. You wake up at whatever time and you're like, okay, I'm going to get this done, that done. It's 6 o'clock and nothing got done. Nothing got done. And how it can be
nothing got
like
done
for type A people who are used to getting a bunch of stuff done, it can be depressing. Like for me, it was fine. I didn't do no housework. I'm fine. I'm good. But you know, and if stuff didn't get done, I'm breastfeeding. He would come home. What you do today? I manufactured and delivered milk. What did you do? And I was fine. My TV worked. I sat right there and ate, and I was fine. But you know, but everybody is not like that. And so to have a community of women who are all going through the same thing, they get to talk to each other and they become friends and they hang out. They have play dates as their children get older. That is not what the birthing place is doing, but they have friends. Like they have friends. And so they have that. Then once a month we do a breastfeeding meetup and, you know, they think, oh, breastfeeding is so wonderful. No, it's not. Not in the beginning. It hurts. And now with the advent of all this tongue tie, lip tie, cheek tie, and you got to get it cut and then your nipples are sore and then this hurts and that hurts. Like to hear how long it takes to really like your kid, because every time you look down at them, they want to suck and your nipples are raw and bleeding. You know, oh, you had to go through that too. Yep, I sure did. It's like, oh, okay, great. Because it's a lonely life, especially when you was all young and spry and partying and then you sit down and you wanted a kid. You're like, oh yeah, let's have a kid. And you're like, oh, we had a kid. It's a lot. It's a lot. It is way a
lot. It's a lot. So all these different classes and things that you're offering, are you doing this all yourself? Are you present for all of them? Or do you have support around?
The only thing I don't do is Healing Monday. I don't like do that anymore. I started off doing it, but then what happened was I would have somebody in labor on a Monday and I'd have to cancel it. And so the first mom that took it over was a wonderful mom because she was there from the very beginning. And she, we were doing Healing Monday. She had her baby on a Monday. I ran out, and after she had the baby, I ran out and did Healing Monday. And then the next week, she was out there doing Healing Monday. I was like, girl. And so then she took it over after I had to cancel so many times. And now we actually have it in two locations because Houston is big. And so we have one in town and one on the north side. Another mom took that one over. And so that the moms don't have to drive all the way in town. So it's great. But yeah, I'm there for everything else.
Wow. Okay. And so what is longevity in midwifery look like for you? Are there things that you do? Would you say that midwifery is what fills you up and provides you with that longevity? Or would you say that there's like a community? You talked about the other midwives who still
the
connect
moms
with. Like
and
what
the
helps you to feel sustainable in midwifery? What
the
fills
moms
you
and
up?
The babies. I mean, I call my sister midwives when, you know, situation happened, like I just had a fetal demise, 32 weeker, cord around the neck. So you know, you need support with that. But it's the moms and the babies. Yeah, the families.
Yeah. I love it. So one of the last questions I want to ask you is, we know that right now in our country, we have a really bad, we've had for, I mean, since the time our country began, pretty much a really bad maternal mortality problem, especially in the Black community, even infant mortality. And we know that the majority of Black women in our country are going through the hospital system for their maternity care. I'm really passionate about Black women finding out about community midwifery and just seeing that there's a completely different way to go throughout your pregnancy and then to be cared for, to have like that community support that you talk about. Because it's just not happening when you go through the hospital system. You might meet other moms if you go through, you know, some kind of centering class or whatever, but the community integration that you're talking about is just something you don't really see in the hospital system. That's community midwifery. And then the care that you get from a midwife,
oh, they
being
can't
able
email
to just
me.
Call your midwife up or email them.
I
think
them,
all of that stuff.
They could call me.
Oh, okay.
They could call and text.
But they get to call you. So.
Correct.
But even still, that's access that people to their provider that most people don't get. So really my question is, what do you think is the solution for helping more Black women, one, have better outcomes in birth, but connecting more with
I'm a little bit different than a lot of other people because unfortunately, we don't value paying for stuff. And I understand because I'm an African American, my degree's in African American history and all that, but we will have a big screen TV, we will have a really nice car. When I tell them you gotta pay me money, they're like, yeah, but I got Medicaid. I was like, yep, you sure do. And so you go get what Medicaid is going to give you. Mm-hmm. Okay. So some onus I put on us because we don't value what paying for something is. And I had a couple who they paid me and their job was DoorDash and they paid me and they came late. And so, from there, I was like, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. I had a VBAC mom. She was a dentist. He was an engineer. And he said, well, I don't want to move any money around. I said, okay, well, you go on back to where you came from and have your next C-section. You know? And so that being said, all women in this country are dying. We are dying 3 to 4 times more. Our babies die twice as much. But the deal is we don't even know. We like when I say it, I'm like, so do you know about that? They're like, no. Yes. And the reason why we're dying is because we're not being listened to. And so I had an obstetrician come to the office. She was 33 weeks and she was complaining because she wasn't getting the care that she wanted. And I said, but you don't even get the care that you want. And so I said, she said, well, the majority of that, this is what this woman said to me. She said, the majority of my clients are indigent, so they don't ask any questions. So we could do whatever we want. I stood up. I said, okay, well, thank you. And she was coming to me for care. I was like, yeah, no, I said, because I have been indigent. And so you telling me that you don't have to give somebody care because they don't ask any questions. And because they ain't asking any questions. I said, oh, okay. I stood up.
You don't have
said,
to give them informed consent because they don't ask any questions.
That. I wasn't even, you know, but we have to be informed. And I have in the course of my professional life, the people who value me the least are the people I did it for free. They don't call, they don't say nothing, and so I don't do it no more. I had to give a lot of care to, to get them straight. And so, and that's unfortunate, like, you know, because we all need care. And we all need quality care, but you gotta educate, like, and the deal is, it's just like this woman called me and she was having her fourth or fifth kid. And she wanted a VBAC. She had C-sections the whole time. I said, well, how come? She said, well, I just found out. I said, but let me tell you something. I asked her how old her children were. And they were like almost stair steps. I said, the information that you found out mm-hmm. today was out there 5-6 years ago. It was out there 10 years ago, but you didn't look. And so some of that you have to put on mm-hmm. yourself. Now, mm-hmm. I totally understand everybody can't afford me. Like, I'm not, mm-hmm. I am not so ignorant, you know, mm-hmm. but if you come in here and say something, 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 but it was like, what? I got to pay? Like,
yeah,
you do. Yeah, you mm-hmm. do.
Yeah, yeah. You bring up a really good point, Ms. Afua, because in the community that I'm in now, the one thing, not the one thing, but one of the primary things that I've hear being pushed as the reason why Black women don't choose midwifery care mm-hmm. is because
but they got their nails done. It's expensive, done.
Like you
they
said.
They got their hair done. They got their eyelashes on. They got whatever they consider are nice clothes. Now, I might not consider yes. them nice clothes, but they do. And so my thing is, until you can, and you don't have to look like me. You don't have to look like me at all, but you got to honor what it is that I do, and can't say, here's my Medicaid card. Just take that. Like, yeah, no. Mm-mm.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you make a good point, because it's not sustainable. I think midwives, even who advocate for better Medicaid coverage for midwifery, realize even if Medicaid covers midwifery care, it would not be sustainable to run your practice so taking primarily Medicaid clients.
There were two practices here that took primarily Medicaid. And, but when you read the reviews, and people say, oh yeah, but I have to use my Medicaid. I say, okay, here, I give them the people. And so I said, but read the reviews. And they're like, or they'll say, I've already read the reviews. I don't want to go there. I said, well, mm-hmm. you're going to have to pay then. Like, you know, something. You're going to have to pay something. And so, but you got to come in here yes. and talk to me. I'm not just saying, well, I'm going to give you a discount because I'm not doing that. Not anymore. I don't have to.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's a little bit disrespectful. It's disrespectful on both ends. It's disrespectful to you and your skill and your craft. It's also disrespectful to assume that right. just because someone looks a certain yeah. way, or that they come from a certain background, then that means they need free care and that you should give them free care. People could, like you said, right. people can make decisions and they can prioritize what they think is most important. I'm glad to hear your perspective. Like, yeah, I think it's a needed perspective to be a part of this conversation that
I
is not always.
I want to say is that I wish hospitals were a place where women could have the birth that they want. Like that, but once again, what changed mm-hmm. was when 30, 40 years ago, obstetricians knew they weren't going to be home. Their standard of living was going to go up because they were going to make money, but they weren't going to be home because there weren't these big conglomerate practices. They were maybe they were the only mm-hmm. ones or one or two, and they had to go. Now, obstetricians are like, I get off at 5
yeah.
or I want to go home. It's dinner time. And so how can they be home at dinner time is to mm-hmm. induce section and then they're home. And so it's unfortunate. But when you try mm-hmm. to offer women an alternative, I used to teach a class, how to navigate your hospital birth. And people were like, oh yeah, no, I don't need that. I don't need that. They would come back and say, oh, I really needed that. Yeah. So I'm like, yeah, but that's after the fact, because most women don't mm-hmm. even know their obstetrician is not even going to be there to deliver them. They don't even know that. That's something simple. That's simple, yes. and they don't yeah, know it. So what about the complicated things? And I was at a talk about our high infant maternal mortality and morbidity, babies and moms. And there was an African-American obstetrician, and it was she and I, and she went first. And she said, well, the reason why we're dying is because we're obese. Mm-hmm. We're on, we have high blood pressure. We're on opioids and we have diabetes. And so she went on to talk about how we got to change. I said, so you don't think that these white women are not obese and they're not the ones that are here that are dying half as, you know, half what our baby, they're dying. I said, and then what about the other countries? Mm-hmm. They're obese. They got diabetes. I said, it is because y'all don't listen to us. The care that you give us is like trying to put a car together, and every car is not the same. But if it's not, then we just gonna cut it out. Let's just cut it out. And so she wasn't, she didn't want to acquiesce with me until she saw, you saw Unnatural Causes. That is a documentary about our high infant and maternal mortality. Yeah. And so when she saw that, she was like, oh, yeah. So the next time they had to talk, they didn't invite me. They just had some other people up there. Yeah, no, not you. Not you.
Oh, they said, okay, Mr. Fua. I already know the answer, not you next time.
So.
So do you think there is a way to help Black women navigate the hospital system, or you don't think it's like them, you can't get somebody to listen to you that's not going to listen to you?
But unfortunately, depending upon who their healthcare provider is, like they, I think that obstetricians believe that what they're doing is correct. I really think that, they think that is correct.
Okay,
and
I would
so
agree
they
with
have
that
the
too.
Right to do it.
They
and
think that it's correct.
So we need women to go in there and challenge it. But then sometimes the doctor will just drop them. You know, I've seen that. It's like, oh, you're a problem. You're trying to tell me I'm wrong, so you need to go someplace else. Or a client, one of my clients said, the husband said, we might be considering a midwife. She said, oh, yeah, well, you want your records now? Because we're not doing this together. And I was like, you know, and that happens all the time. He didn't believe it because that was her gynecologist for so long. They was great friends, blah, blah, blah. But it was like, okay, we can end this right now. So, yes, there is, but unfortunately, it's going to take a lot. It's going to take a lot of education. I mean, if they don't listen to Serena, what are our chances? What are our chances, you know? Because she told them exactly what she needed now. And people don't want to hear this. But she created that situation because before she had the baby, she said, I'm getting my epidural. Now, she had a doula. The doula should have told her, no, you don't need that because you already have this underlying issue, you know, and so you shouldn't do that. But she was like, oh, yeah, I'm getting epidural. I was like, and how did that work out for you?
Would you say that you, that well-educated, well-resourced Black women.
For sure. Like,
choose
they don't
hospital
know.
Because
they
think
they
it's
don't
safer
know
because they think they're going
to
get better care.
That's what the majority of people do, is go to the hospital. So they don't, like, and so I'm not, what's my word? Popular about this thing, too. Like, people think, oh, I'm going to hire a doula and I'm going to have a good outcome. And I'm like, that's so not the case. Like, and they put all this faith in this doula. And when you get into the hospital, the doctor not listening to the doula. You know, I mean, now for comfort measures, yes. But when that doctor look at his or her watch and time, I mean, I just had a mom who was 8 centimeters for 8 hours. That's not going to happen in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that doesn't happen. I assumed you were talking, you had one in the birth center like that. Because
And then she pushed her baby out. But she, so if the doula said, mm-hmm. hey, can you give her a little more? Oh, yeah, we mm-hmm. give her 10 more minutes. You know? And so I'm not like, oh, pushing the doula thing. I'm pushing the midwives. That's what I'm doing. And I'm not popular, but, you know, I really don't care.
Okay. I think it's needed that your perspective. I think your perspective is really important. And I think sometimes people feel afraid or threatened to share their perspective when they know it's not
doctors
popular.
Doctors choose doulas,
but sometimes it's needed.
Say, oh, they have such an impact on the outcome. They know they lying. Is, you know, that's a lie. Like, that's a lie. You know, and so, but they're easily controlled, and they're appeasing the mom. They're appeasing the mom. And so, yeah, get you a doula. And, I think that doulas do a good job advertising. So I have a t-shirt. It says, and it's for guys. It says, consider a midwife. And they wear it. Mm-hmm. And I don't care where they are. Some women go up to them. So your wife had a midwife? Yeah. And then they start crying, talking about their hospital birth. And here these dads are looking at these women. And or dads will come up to them. So you really think that's a viable alternative? And so because we have to promote ourselves. We have to promote ourselves. So yeah, I have a t-shirt that says consider a midwife. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, just to text me your text me your address. I'll send you
I need
t-shirt.
One of those shirts.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm ready.
Okay. And I'll send you the money. Okay. So last question. I'm blown away by everything that you've been talking about, how you came to midwifery, just the way you've connected and kept such a sisterhood among the Black midwives that you started out with, how you're serving the community there in Houston. But I want to know, what is the legacy that you're hoping to leave behind, and where do you see the birthing place in 5 to 10 years?
I thought that my students would be able to come in and do some stuff. That's not the case. So whenever I get ready, it's unfortunately going to shut mm-hmm. down. And that's unfortunate. But I tried as hard as I mm-hmm. could. And I'm not easy. Like, I'm not an easy person. I'm not a kind person. I'm very generous. Like, mm-hmm. I'm very generous. But so to step to me, mm-hmm. you gotta really be able to step to the plate, and they can't handle me. So unfortunately, when I decide to retire, it's gonna close.
The students, your past students.
Yeah.
And is that going to be in the next 5 to 10 years, or you think it'll? And so, if another
they
got to
come and work
said,
with me
hey,
because
Nicola,
it's such a special
like
place that
place.
I know that
what would you
they're
say about that?
Not going to do it the way I do it, but I'm not just leaving it in anybody's hands, because I could leave it in somebody's hands, but it's like, yeah, no, mm-mm. Because it is so much love when and now, mm-hmm. like, and I okay. tell my clients the truth. Like the feat of demise that happened. She's like, I'm going to lose my mind. I said, I'm so sorry. That's not an option. I said, we're going to grieve right now. I said, but you have 3 boys looking at you. And your husband, he's good mm-hmm. and everything. And he real cute. And he lucked out on you. Mm-hmm. And he probably going to find some stupid woman to raise your 3 boys. That's not going to work. That's not going to work. And the nurse was in there saying, damn, because she hadn't even delivered the baby yet. She hadn't even delivered the baby yet. And I'm telling her, I was like, yeah, like it's not gonna happen.
You're giving her tough love.
I had a 19-year-old who had cancer and she died. So I'm like, I know the pain. Like, you know, even though this one wasn't even born, you saw it was a boy. I said, you saw him with your other three boys walking down the street, going to college, doing this and doing that. So it's no different. The pain that you feel is no different of the loss. And I just kept it coming. I'm like, okay, let's cry now.
Yeah.
All right. Now I wipe them tears. And then, okay.
Yeah.
She was like, oh, I was like, yeah, no, sorry. You cannot lose your mind. That's not an option.
Your love and your like relationship with your clients is much like a mother. It's like your mom is going to tell you the stuff that a counselor probably is not going to tell you. The counselor is going to do whatever they can to help you, you know, feel protected and safe and like, you know, really coddled in a way. And your mom is like, you really have to move on with your life, even though this devastating thing has happened. And we can all recognize and acknowledge that it was devastating.
I do a lot of counseling.
But I also want you to know that you will survive.
So do you know, we just had a counseling
session.
I said, I know. Like, I know. And it's about their moms, their dads, their relationships, their this, their that. I'm like, yeah. That's how it is. I told one mom, I said, your dad, he not going to be nice. He ain't been nice. You're 35 years old. He not going to turn to be nice now. So what you going to do? She was like, oh, but I said, yeah, that's nice. But that's TV. The reality is, and he got a new wife. Oh, he gone. He gone. He gone. So let's deal with the real deal. And what?
Okay, Ms. Afua, where do you see the birthing place in 50 years?
Oh, in 50
or
years.
The leg, or excuse me, what do you imagine
because
people
my
say
kids,
about the birthing center?
Not
the
my
place,
kids that I birthed, but my children, no, I was born right here. And then, like, I have a mom, she got five kids. And the daughter says, I was born right here. You were born on the other side. Nope. This is my room. And so they know who I am. And so they're hopefully the majority of them will look for midwives too. Mm-hmm. I mean, and that's my goal is that it just doesn't stop with, oh, they were born by a midwife, but they understand because they come by all the time, like all the time. And so my goal is that it will have positively impacted midwifery so that it can grow because it needs to grow. Because our alternative at this point is like a poor alternative as far as I'm concerned. But I don't want anybody who wants to be in the hospital. So go to the hospital if you want to be in the hospital. But if you want to be outside the hospital, please find a midwife. Mm-hmm. My love for them.
Yeah. What is one thing that you hope all your clients remember about you? Yeah. Okay, I have a couple of fun questions before we wrap up. Well, one fun question and then one kind of logistical question. So what are you reading right
salt
now? Do you like to read or do you do audiobooks
into
or
poetry,
something like that?
But Salt is a book by, her last name is Waeed, Nayera Waeed. And you can't even find a picture of what she looks like. But I just open up the book and it says the right thing. And they're short. And it's so I had to do a counseling session, and this was straight up. The mom had her baby, and it was for the mom who had the baby and her mom. And it said, I am the poet, but the poem changes your life. And then at the bottom, it said medium. And that's just what I was. And I just opened up the book, like I just before their session. I just opened it up and that's what it was. And at the end, the things that I said to them changed their life. And it was stuff they knew, but then they just were like, Yeah, that's what that's yeah. And so she is, I say she because it feels like a woman's perspective. It feels like an African-American woman. And like, I can't sit down and just read the book because it's too much. Like, you got to absorb it. And so, yeah, that's what I'm doing right now.
Okay. All right. That sounds like a good book. I think I've actually heard somebody share a poem out of it.
Okay. So,
so then last question, okay, where can so people find you online? So if you want to just briefly tell your,
and you're going to, it's going to say the birthing place, blah, 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 because the birthingplace.com website is down due to technical difficulties, but there is one that's up. So you just put in birthingplace.com and you'll see me. Then there's Facebook, that's the birthing place. There's Twitter, that's the birthing place. And there's Instagram, that's the birthing place. So you just know the birthing place and you're going to get to Afua. Yes.
Wonderful. Miss Afua, it was truly an honor to talk with you today. I am so excited I actually got to interview you finally and hear from you. I hope to visit you sometime.
This COVID thing, just come on and come. You got to, so are you delivering now? You got moms?
So they took the students out of practicum. So the practice that I'm at, they're still catching babies. Their moms are still giving birth, but they have not allowed the students to go back to practicum. So,
Sadly, okay, so are you guys
right now just on break for spring break, and then I'll go back and just be doing the didactic again.
Yeah, tell them you need a week off in May.
Yeah,
yeah, a week off in May.
I have a husband here.
Oh, I guess a week off in May. Don't care. Okay. Like,
and I have thick skin, Miss Afua, like, so you're not gonna hurt my feelings.
If I do, it'd be another one bites the dust. Yes, right. Yeah. It's
Why can't you hear the girl? Okay, get back on the airplane. Go back to Seattle.
I'm awful. I'm actually awful. But no, seriously, no, seriously. If you're not back in school, and if your husband can watch the kids, come on down, okay? Okay, have a great night day. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the American Midwife Series podcast with me, your host, Angelica Malone, and our guest, Miss Afua Hassan. She was absolutely exciting and vibrant and so fun to talk with. I'm so glad I got to share that with you all too. I think she provided some really interesting perspectives, and it was really cool to hear her journey through midwifery starting in the 80s and how she went down to Atlanta and then settled in Houston and just really dug her roots in deep and become that community midwife that so many of us desire to be. I'm so glad I got to share that with you and that we got to just hear her story. There will be a special blog post on my website with details from this episode. You'll also be able to find details from this episode in the show notes. You'll find links to the Birthing Place's website and social media accounts. You'll also be able to find links to my social media accounts and my website. Again, if you have questions or comments that you want to share with me, you can email me at hello@angelicamalone.com. So that's H-E-L-L-O at symbol A-N-J-E-L-I-C-A-M-A-L-O-N-E.com. And you can find me on Instagram. My username is @angelicamalone. During this COVID pandemic, I hope that you stay safe and well and that you're able to spend quality time with your family and friends. And I'll see you back here again soon with another insightful and possibly funny episode of the American Midwife Series podcast. See you later.